Welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller, and on today's show, we have a conversation with the man who created NPR's All Songs Considered, as well as NPR's Tiny Desk Concert Series. Today, we're speaking with Bob Boylan. All Songs Considered is a podcast showcasing new music from established and emerging artists. Boylan co-hosts it with Robin Hilton, and as you'll hear in this interview, when Boylan created it in the year 2000, podcasting wasn't even a word yet. It was one of the first music shows to be launched online. We'll also hear about how Boylan created the Tiny Desk Concert Series for NPR, where bands play at his desk, literally at his desk at NPR headquarters in Washington, and NPR films the performances and puts them online. You may have also heard about the Tiny Desk Concert Contest that NPR is hosting. It's a chance for bands to submit videos and possibly win a slot on the performance series. Boylan will give us some advice for anybody who's thinking of entering. Due to the snow, Boylan couldn't actually make it into NPR headquarters where he was supposed to record this interview with us, so he's actually speaking to us from his home in Washington, D.C. Bob Boylan, thank you for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
You know, when I first started working here at WTC, I swear I thought NPR would very quickly call me, begging me to join the NPR team up there in Washington, D.C. That, of course, has abjectly failed to happen. But, you know, then again, I haven't been very proactive in trying to get on with NPR. It sounds like you were very, very persistent when you wanted an NPR job. Tell me about how you first got started.
I was a musician back in the early 80s, doing early sampling back in the very early days of sampling, about the early 80s. And I made a piece of music NPR heard. They interviewed me about that piece of music. It was a piece of music imagining the history of sound in 20 minutes using sampled sounds from volcanoes and bees and all sorts of crazy stuff, and they loved it. A handful of years later, about 5 years later, I was working in a TV job, doing theater, writing music, and I was a huge fan of NPR. And I found the person who helped produce that radio story 5 years previous, his name, Ira Glass. Ira was a producer at All Things Considered back in the 80s, and I said, I want to work here. He gave me a reel of tape to cut, and I guess I did okay. An interview, and he said, come back Monday, and I would literally show up on the door every Monday. Every day. I would literally show up at the doorstep every day and say, hey, guys, you need any help today? And they would hire me for a week, and they'd hire me for two, and within a year, I was directing All Things Considered.
That's pretty impressive.
I never did radio in my life, and I never did journalism, and I dropped out of college, so I thought it was pretty good.
I mean, that was, as you were saying, that was the days of editing when you were literally splicing tape together before my time. But I understand it was a lot harder than, you know, what we've got today with editing software.
Yeah, I mean, undoing was the hardest thing to do. The actual physical editing was no big deal with a razor blade and splicing tape. But the actual, you know what, somebody says to you, could you put the part back where they said, I really like driving down the road in the snow? And you say, which piece of tape is that? The one in the trash can 3 feet down or the one in the trash can? So undoing was tougher. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the tactile nature of it. I enjoyed not being looking at a screen all the time. But I also really love digital editing. So,
As the director of All Things Considered, what does the director actually do?
The best way to describe it is the orchestra conductor analogy, which is I don't write the score. That the producer does. In other words, I don't decide what's on the air that day on the radio show. The producer does that. But as the director, as the conductor, I make sure that everybody is in place. So the players are playing the right page. And in this case, the hosts are reading the right script, that I have the right tape or sound file in place to play, that my reporter in the field is ready to be on the line and talk. But the other thing we do, we transition from story to story, and the director, because we are the timekeepers as well, and have to end segments specifically to the second, we play music to fill time and to make transitions. And I pick music between news stories, and that's sort of led me to creating a music show.
When you were directing, were there times when anything went just completely, completely wrong live on the air?
I directed for 18 years. You can imagine. We could sit and talk for a long time about those things. But yes, especially when we started going digital, because when we went when digital goes wrong, it goes wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You have nothing. So there were a few times in our early days of using our digital audio system where nothing would play, and you would quickly have to scramble and get reporters on the line to have a conversation about what they had reported, as opposed to playing all the tape they had gathered and the stories they had written. And
so it sounds like, if the story didn't fire, you would just kind of try to throw together a very quick two-way with the reporter instead.
Absolutely. We'd page the building, get reporters down in the studio. We'd call Italy and get Sylvia on the line, Sylvia Pagioli, if I remember the specific instance where we had to do that. It's a harried affair, because you're doing that all the while you are trying to direct the score that is ongoing. You can't say, okay, hang on a minute, everybody. We're going to have a little dead air while we get ourselves together. You can't do that.
True. It's not like TV where you can just put up a card that says, we're having technical difficulties.
that was a running joke, that because I was in TV, I would always say, let's put up a slide. But like you say, you can't do that in radio.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with NPR's Bob Boylan, creator of NPR's All Songs Considered podcast with Robin Hilton. And you were saying this, it came about initially from the music that you were using as transitions between the stories. How did you turn that into All Songs Considered?
Well, this was the year 1999. The internet was starting to be a way that people would get information. And I thought I would, back in those days, get handwritten letters, a little later some email, about the music played between news stories. Lots of email and lots of handwritten letters. And it struck me that people seemed music-starved and intrigued by the sorts of odd music we would play, because I'd pick some oddball stuff and off-the-wall stuff and things nobody heard. And I thought, people probably want to hear more than 20 seconds of this or 60 seconds of this if they're writing in to find out what it is. And so I had this idea to do an internet-only music show, featuring the music played on All Things Considered, and did that for a while. But then, as that was 2000, is when our show went on the web. But quickly realized I was getting all this music that was so interesting, and it was silly to just limit it to the instrumental music breaks on All Things Considered. So I started expanding and playing all sorts of different music.
If it was in 2000, was it even called podcasting back then?
There was no podcast. It was an internet music show. About 2005, August 2005, is when podcasting took off. Well, that's not even right. It didn't take off. Podcasting was birthed. And we were one of the early podcasts, certainly one of the first music podcasts, and as well as one of the first internet music shows.
For people who've somehow managed to miss it over the last, 15, 16 years, how would you describe All Songs Considered?
It's, I'd say the best way to capture it would be, imagine a couple of friends sitting down talking about the music that they love, that is brand new, that probably you've never heard, and you as an audience member will hopefully fall in love with some of the things that we fall in love with. Our whole idea, it's not a music criticism show. It's not an insider's look into music. It is really about the passion of loving music and passing that passion on to people who might not otherwise hear songs that we get a chance to hear before they do.
How do you pick the songs that you feature on it?
We get submissions from artists and labels, publicists, and listen to lots of things, and the things that strike us, we choose to put on the show. I hear hundreds and hundreds of pieces of music every week, as does Robin Hilton, my co-host, and we pick each three pieces of music to put on. And sometimes they're artists we've featured before and we'd like to follow the growth of them, or sometimes it's an artist we've never heard of. And it's really what hits us in the gut. We don't like to play things just for the sake of, this is popular, we should play this. We look for stuff that really hits us.
The Tiny Desk Contest that's going on, that's tied into the Tiny Desk Concert Series that you have on NPR's website. And you get these amazing artists. You got Adele, you've gotten Taurus, one of my favorite artists recently, to play at your desk, literally play at your desk, and then, you film it and put it on the web for people to watch. How did this get started?
It started as a kind of a bit of a lark. My friend and co-worker Stephen Thompson and I went to South by Southwest. It's a music festival in Austin. And we went to see a singer who is very, very quiet. Her name is Laura Gibson. We went into this bar, and at that bar, as in many places at South by Southwest, they're not always strictly music places. There are great places to hear music at South by Southwest, but everything turns into a music venue. In this case, it was a bar with a row of TVs playing some sort of March basketball game thing you might know about. And they weren't much paying attention to Laura Gibson. It was noisy in there. We couldn't hear her. She comes off stage, and Stephen Thompson jokingly said to Laura, "You ought to just come and play our office when you come to town." And for me, light bulbs went off. Having been in video, having done audio recording in the past, I thought, yeah. So when she came to D.C., she called up and said, "I'm on my way. I got a couple of cameras, got a microphone, put her behind my desk," and she played. And Laura is a unusual artist. She's not everybody's cup of tea, but the reaction to that video was really powerful. And I figured from the reaction that we had something going on here.
And because you get so many viewers on NPR.org, it could really be a big break for somebody who's just starting out. You've got this contest going on, inviting bands to submit videos and possibly win a chance to go there and play. So tell me about this contest. I know last year's winner, Fantastic Negrito, played here in Chattanooga after he'd won the contest.
Oh, wonderful. The idea is that although I listen to an awful lot of stuff and get pitched a lot of stuff, there's a lot of bands that are not ever getting to me. And we thought it would be wonderful to see what is out there that we would... I'm not getting to Chattanooga anytime soon. There must be great local bands there. And this is a chance for friends to gather and make a video they might not otherwise do. And so it's kind of in that way, a kind of cool experience, but also a chance for us to see talent we never would see otherwise. And, you only pick one winner, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is all the community that forms around all of the bands that put their videos together, and that you, in a way, you timestamp a place. You make a document of a place and time where you and your friends are in the music-making world, and hopefully get recognized.
Do you have any tips for people who are thinking of entering?
The most important thing is to make a song that you are proud of, to make something that is something that only you or you and your friends could do. I don't really need another blues song if it's just another blues song. I don't really need another plain old rock and roll song. I want somebody to send me something that is singularly theirs, that they own, so to speak, that only they and their friends could make and be proud of it. I don't care much about the quality of the video, although it's fun to have fun with that. I don't care so much about the actual quality of the audio. If you win, you'll be behind my desk. We'll record it very well. I can see through all of that stuff. I'm looking for something original. And if that's what you feel like you have to offer, you should enter the contest.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with NPR's Bob Boylan, creator of All Songs Considered, and we've been talking about the Tiny Desk Concert, which you've probably been hearing about on WTC. We've been promoting it. And Bob, in 2013 and 2014, you saw 662 bands in both years. Last year, you say you saw only 506 bands. How do you enjoy it? It seems like it would just become a chore seeing that many bands after a while.
Other people have said that too. I could never ever see it as a chore. I find it absolutely fascinating that at any moment. I'll go and see a band, often ones I've never heard of, which is what I'm after, and see something and hear something that's going to totally surprise me and capture me, and I can then ask them to come play my desk and do something to help their career along. I find it a thrill. There's nothing other than the running home, making dinner, and running back out again part of it. There's nothing about it that's a chore to me. I wouldn't do it if it were a chore. I love it. I don't get tired of it. A couple of years ago, I started doing photographs, so I've added another dimension to my concert going, so photography. But just the idea that there's somebody in town who I can actually help advance what they do is kind of I feel very fortunate. I mean, I'm a musician. I played music. I toured. I would have loved that person in my life to come along and say, God, you guys got something really special. Can I help your music get out there? And what a wonderful, it's a gift that I feel I'm in a position to give. It was the same reason that sparked All Songs Considered in the first place. I would get all of this music into All Things Considered that I could play on the air. And it's just, it feels so fortunate to be able to take it and do something with it. It's, I'm only one voice. There's fortunately lots of ways to hear music these days, more so than there was in the year 2000. But even so, people who are making music don't always have the ability to get their stuff heard on a larger capacity. And, NPR can do that.
How often do you see a band and say, you know what, I think they really were better on the album than live?
I'd say that's happens rarely. I think in this day and age, bands shine more on the stage. I wouldn't have said that growing up in the 60s and 70s. I think bands did better on their records. But these days, bands tour an awful lot. I mean, there are many, many, many more clubs than there ever were. The tours are longer. Bands can be out there for, 200, it wouldn't be unusual to play 200 shows in a year, and they get good. They get real good. And in fact, the time that they spend making that record, which is, weeks oftentimes, nothing compared to the amount of time they go out and then take those songs and make them different, or grow into them as they play over and over again. You mentioned Torres, who I've seen, four or five times in the past year, including at my desk. And those songs have completely changed from what is on the record, from what it was when I first saw her back at the beginning of last year. It's thrilling, and it's thrilling for them. They get to, reshape the songs that they write.
Yeah, like with her case specifically, I really loved her album. Then when I saw her live, it was very different. I think maybe part of that was, I think the musicians she has in her band now are not the same ones who are actually on the album, so they may have come up with some kind of different instrumentation or things like that.
Mm-hmm. But even the ones that played 7-10 months ago, who I did see, same band, are playing them different. So I think artists just grow into their songs and find ways to emphasize and have and express. If they did the same thing every night, which doesn't thrill me, it wouldn't be as much fun for them, and it wouldn't come across as strong for them. The fact that they can express themselves differently on different nights is part of the art of making music.
You've written a book called Your Song Changed My Life. It's coming out in April. Tell me what this book is about.
Over the years, I've done lots of interviews with musicians, and I'm often fascinated how some incident somewhere, often in childhood or early teens, changed the course of what they wound up doing. And in the case of talking to musicians, it's becoming a musician. They may not have had the aspiration. They may not have thought they had the talent. They may not have figured how they could possibly do it. And often it's a song that they'll mention that made them think about music and think about picking up a guitar or picking up the drums or writing words or singing. And so I spent a couple of years interviewing 35 musicians about a song that changed their life. And it was their conversations are fascinating. So I took the conversations that I did and I wrote an essay, each one, each artist is represented by a chapter, and looked at what the song was, what they do as an artist, what the artist that they picked was like and how that artist influenced the music around them, and just try to sort of pull all the pieces together.
You interviewed St. Vincent for this book. I got to say, I think she's one of my top three artists right now. What was her song?
So St. Vincent picked a song by Pearl Jam, a song called Oceans.
Huh.
She prided herself in like being a massive Pearl Jam song fan. She prided herself in being a massive Pearl Jam fan and liking all of the sort of lesser known cuts, and Oceans was one of them.
Oh, that's really interesting. I never would have guessed that, actually.
Right? Yeah. It becomes quite fascinating when someone like Cat Stevens picks, you know, Twist and Shout, or, you know, somebody like Conor Oberst picks American Pie. You just go, really? Trey Anastasio from Fish would pick, you know, something from West Side Story.
Huh.
Sometimes it's what you expect, but more often than not, it's not. And that's when they really get fun.
For the Tiny Desk Concert Contest, how many entries are you expecting?
Last year, their first contest, we had 7,000.
7,000?
7,000 submissions.
How do you find the time to watch them all?
From every state in the country. The best way to do it for me, first I thought I'd watch every one of them, not knowing there were going to be 7,000. So yeah. I watched and watched and watched. Then when it became obvious, because musicians like to procrastinate, when the 13, 15, or 2,000 came in the last day, I realized that I needed a team. So I talked to NPR Music people, and I said, watch these videos. I want to see only the ones where there is a spark of something that is unique, that you can imagine them winning, that you could imagine them playing behind my desk. Out of that, I got 2,500 or so to look at, and I watched them.
Well, thank you, Bob Boylan. Is there anything else you want to say?
I look forward to seeing these submissions. This is like going to shows. I look forward to being surprised and enchanted. And even though it's a contest and there is a winner, the most important thing is to just challenge yourself to do something, document that thing, and have fun with it. That's more than anything. The most important part of what you do is to embrace your talent and be proud of what you do and enjoy what you do.
I think that's a very good point. I mean, with probably more than 7,000 entries this time, you know, odds are you're not going to win, but at least if you have fun doing it, that seems to be what really counts.
Right. And I have to say, their artist, River Wireless, was a band who entered the contest that didn't win the contest. And I saw them in Nashville, knowing their name, at the Americana Fest, blew me away live, invited him to the desk. There are many artists who didn't win the contest, whose names I remember, who I did see over the course of the year, who I then invited to the desk. So, you may not win, but you may wind up there anyway.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
That was Bob Boylan, creator of NPR's All Songs Considered and NPR's Tiny Desk Concert Series. The Tiny Desk Concert Contest is going on right now. It's a chance for local bands to enter, submit videos, and possibly win a slot on the performance series. You can find details about that online at WUTC.org. The deadline is February 2nd.